A tectonic shift is taking place in the Arab world. It's nothing to do with the temporary and patchable squabbles of princes or spoils or alliances. Neither has it any relevance to the two traditional bugbears of the Sunni Arab ruler, Iran and the Muslim Brotherhood. It's not been triggered by a trader setting himself on fire after having his food carts confiscated by officials in Sidi Bouzid, Tunisia. No mass demonstrations have taken place in Cairo calling for the downfall of the dictator. And yet this shift could have as wide a repercussion as the Arab Spring once had 15 years ago. What's commonly referred to in the Middle East as the real nations of the Arab world, and by that we mean nations with a significant population, have woken up to what's been happening around them. Saudi Arabia, Algeria principally, but also Egypt potentially, have realized that a plan to dominate and control the key choke points of the region by Israel explicitly and the United Arab Emirates implicitly is a threat to their national interest. The Israeli-Emirati plan is simple. Fragment Arab states, control the key trade routes like the Bab el-Mandeb Straits between Yemen and the Horn of Africa, plant military bases all around the region, and you will get hold of a lucrative military and financial control for the rest of the century. Israel expressed this plan explicitly in speeches and numerous visits. It's the formula they're using in Syria, with their creation of a protectorate of the Druze in southern Syria, and attempts to do the same with the Kurds in the north. It's open and declared. They want to turn Syria into Libya, a collection of warring regions with no meaningful central control. They're trying the same policy by recognizing Somaliland, which offers the prospect of Israel getting a military foothold in the Horn of Africa for the first time in history. For Abu Dhabi, fragmentation is implicit. They deny financing and arming the RSF in Sudan and feeding a devastating civil war. They deny any connections with the RSF commander, Hemeti, who is under US Treasury sanctions. But fragmentation in Yemen has been their policy for over a decade. Initially, it was to stop Al-Isla, the Muslim Brotherhood, from taking power after the collapse of the Yemeni dictator. Then came the fall of the capital Sana'a to Ansar Allah, the Houthis. Each campaign provided a cover for their real target, which was to finance, arm and install a separatist state in southern Yemen under the banner of the Southern Transitional Council in Aden. This project is nothing new, but it was turbocharged by Mohammed bin Zayed, the president of UAE, who is the brains behind everything this emirate does. Bin Zayed almost got away with it. Abu Dhabi's policy of making the STC so military strong that it could declare itself an independent state that recognized Israel was on the point of becoming a reality. All the STC needed was to take over two sparsely populated but geographically large provinces in the east of the country, Al-Mahara and Hadramut provinces, which account for nearly half of the territory of Yemen. But this is where bin Zayed made his fatal mistake. He went too far. He overreached himself. Hadramut shares a border with Saudi, and the appearance of the STC in the capital, Mukalla, sent the ruler of the Saudi kingdom mad. It sparked the wake-up call that Saudi Arabia needed. The blinkers had fallen from Saudi eyes. They felt they were being surrounded, and if they did not act now, the kingdom itself could be the next target of the fragmentation policy being enacted all around them. A country which for so long had conducted foreign policy slowly and behind bead curtains reached for the gun. The Saudis backed a counteroffensive by Yemeni forces loyal to the internationally recognized government to recapture Hadramut and Al-Muhara. Mukalla was bombed and the STC forced to withdraw. When 3 days later Israel became the first country to officially recognize Somaliland as a sovereign state, Saudi fears that they were being surrounded were confirmed. The fall of a decade of patient work by Abu Dhabi came within a matter of days. When Saudi bombed a shipment of weapons and vehicles in the port of Mukalla, it directly called out the UAE's role in arming the southern separatists. Hours later, Abu Dhabi announced it was withdrawing its forces from Yemen. It even abandoned the island of Socotra. In a matter of hours, all the work, planning and finance of the last decade had come crashing down. This is the way the Middle East changes. not by photo ops choreographed in the Oval Office, not by the statements of the US President Donald Trump that he'd changed 3,000 years of history, which was dismissed as ludicrous almost before he'd got the words out of his mouth, not by grand sounding, but in reality deeply cynical pacts like the Abraham Accords, but by sudden and silent collapses. Idris al-Zubaydi, the leader of the STC, was accused of treason by the Presidential Leadership Council, of whom he and his followers were part. For 24 hours, he went missing. Saudi Arabia has since accused the UAE of orchestrating a covert operation to extract al-Zubaydi from Yemen. It was the single worst day for little Sparta's dreams to dominate the region in living memory. Saudi social media, the licensed and highly controlled voice of the kingdom, went wild. One post featured a Saudi F-16 whizzing through the sky to the tune of a song in English, which went viral. The lyrics ran, "Whoever threatened us with lions in the lion's den, we stormed the den and found no one there. Ma'azi the Second," the nickname of the founder of the kingdom, King Abdulaziz, now applied to MBS, "has no 40 lookalikes. He resembles only his grandfather and his father, Abu Fahd." And sedition, kindled by the accursed devil, was extinguished in its infancy by Ma'azi. These words do not need parsing. The message is all too clear. The devil is now MBZ. And that's how he's being described by its neighbour and former ally. This is a massive sea change, and I think it's a terminal one. This is not something that would be possible to patch over. MBS alighted on the young, unknown prince when relations between the Emirates and the kingdom were at their lowest. Bin Zayed introduced Bin Salman to Washington, the Trump clan, and ultimately the White House itself. MBS owes his entire ascendance up the greasy pole of the Saudi royal family to his Emirati neighbour, who put his well-oiled lobbying machine in DC at his disposal. Bin Zayed was the brains behind the strategy of making the new prince Israel-friendly. He staged secret meetings between the pretender to the throne and the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But ultimately, the fallout between mentor and pupil was only a matter of time. Neither MBS nor his entourage have changed. They're still the same people. They would have no second thoughts about making Saudi dissidents disappear. Human rights do not keep them awake at night. Many of the tweets attacking the Emirati plan are being posted by someone called Columbus, who is reliably thought to be Saud al-Qahtani, the man who oversaw and masterminded the killing of the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the consulate in Istanbul. It is telling that in the midst of Saudi's decisive action in Yemen, the Saudi king and crown prince called for the public Saudi national campaign to donate for Palestinians. It collected 700 million riyals and is still going. So the people who run the kingdom haven't changed. But what has changed is this. They have at last realized that the Emirati and Israeli regional plans are a threat to their own sovereignty and their own kingdom. And that is a red line for any Saudi ruling elite. MBZ knows he cannot mess with his neighbor. Saudi Arabia has a population of 35.5 million. The UAE has a population of 10 million, but only 1 million of those are citizens. End of story. Saudi's wake-up call has to be welcomed by anyone seeking an exit from the doom loop of failed American interventions and permanent Israeli occupation in the Middle East. Yes, the US President Donald Trump still wields all the military power. And yes, there's nothing to stop Benjamin Netanyahu from continuing war and occupation in Gaza, southern Lebanon, southern Syria, from here to eternity. America under Trump can kidnap the president of Venezuela. It can drop a company of special forces on Greenland, plant a flag in the ice, and declare it US sovereign territory. Trump can bomb Iran for a second or third time and ruin any economy around the world if they don't play ball. No one is disputing this. But what neither he nor Netanyahu can do is deal with the consequences of their invasions, any more than George Bush could stop 7 years of civil war after he'd invaded Iraq. The Saudi kingdom does not need to respond symmetrically to Israel's clear and overt plans for regional domination, nor will it. But it can start to make life very difficult for the two little Spartas, the UAE and Israel, who are sowing the seeds of civil war and conflict all around the Middle East. In winning every battle they started, but in losing every war, America and Israel have overreached themselves. Trump's latest tweet that the Venezuelans can only buy American goods with money they generate from the oil that America is about to seize back from them is typical of a president crazed with power. Has Trump looked at the map? Venezuela is twice the size of Iraq and is largely forested, and its people are armed to the teeth. Trump and Netanyahu think they can do what they want when they want. It's long past the time for an Arab leader to stand up to them and tell them they can't.